Very soon, some people will be leaving. Some leaving for the last time in this cycle of the world, and some will be hopefully returning soon. But because of that, I thought it would be useful, perhaps, to give those, especially who will be traveling and moving on to the next chapter of their life's journey, to ask any last questions or get clarifications on any of the teachings, if there are any confusions or questions or doubts. So this is an opportunity for that, as well as for everyone who has any questions or wishes to make any comments about anything, to feel free to do so. So I'll just open the floor right away.
I want to say thank you for everything. I feel like since I came here, many things changed on the outside because I have changed. And even though my body leaves this ashram, my true part will never leave this place, because yeah, the ashram is in me, in my heart, and it will always be the central place where I say the battle of the Gita is fought. And being able to be in that community and to transfer from that I consciousness to a we consciousness is the greatest blessing that was ever given to me, and I really thank you for all the beautiful teachings and all the wisdoms that you shared, and that you were and you will always be my first and only guru. Thank you for everything, and I believe that we will see each other again. And there's also something else new aflamed in me, which is the love for music, which I thought was lost, but due to this place and due to certain people, I think it is awakened again. Thank you for everything.
For those very sweet words, Maya. And of course, I wish you blessings on your journey, and you will be in the hearts of all here. And it's with great affection and appreciation for the greatness of your soul and your heart that we will remember your visit and your effect on the energy field here. And the guru is the one self who is yourself and will be with you wherever your bodily vehicle may go. So know that the guru is within, and you are never separate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Shunya, and thank you to all the other wonderful beings that made our journey here possible and left such a profound impact. And for me, it was a journey that started with a lot of fear, and I probably told it many of you, but Maya showed me a satsang excerpt of yours, and there was so much fear, and I just thought, okay, I should probably go there. And there is something I should look into, and yeah, thank you very much for all the things that you gave us on our way, and thank you for challenging me. And yeah, I'm very grateful that I took that step, and there's definitely been a huge opening in my heart happening, and yeah, I'm looking forward to continue on that way, and I think we'll come back, and yeah, thank you to you, Shunya, and to all the other wonderful beings, and all the best on your journeys.
Thank you, Lucas. I appreciate your courage and your willingness to face a challenge and go through an ordeal of a rite of passage as you have. And I'm very happy to hear that you've gained so much from this journey. And blessings on the next chapter and the next challenge that you will face. And I know that all that you've gained here will serve you in achieving victory in that and every other challenge until the final victory of achieving union with God. So, blessings on that great quest and hero's journey that you're on. We've spoken before about the fact that there are two waves of vibrational energies that are occurring throughout the samsaric field now. And it's a kind of a riptide, in a way, between the pravritti wave and the nirvritti wave. And those who are on the pravritti wave can't understand those who are on the nirvritti wave. And we are in a time when the pravritti wave is weakening and coming to an end. That wave is reaching the shore of the ocean, if you will. It's reaching its final point of extension, and it will soon return and join the nivritti wave. But that wave is already entering into the depths of the ocean of consciousness. And so if one is feeling that the wave that one is on is no longer filled with life and power, and no longer carrying one effortlessly toward one's the fulfillment of whatever dream is motivating one's actions, then know that with just a shift of recognition of the nature of consciousness, the nivritti wave will carry one safely into the abode of God consciousness without any difficulty of alignment with it. But there has to be a very disidentified awareness that can palpate the energies of these two waves and recognize which is the one that will carry one to one's highest destiny at this point. And there may be for some a shift in the direction that they wish to take in life, as their awareness awakens to more of the totality of the nature of the unfoldment of the drama that is underway. And should that occur, there will be a natural humbling and a natural release of the sanskaras that had kept one on a wave that is no longer able to carry one's soul surfboard safely on its journey, and one will be able to hop on to the wave that will bring one back to the source of the power that creates all the waves. So this is a time to be very much aware of those energies that seem to be going in two different directions. One toward a complexification of life and of novelty and of change, and the other back into the stillness beyond duality, beyond life and death, into the abode of God consciousness. And both waves have their beauty, both waves have their purpose, both waves are created by God. But the two waves will lead one's vehicles to two different fates, two different kinds of destiny. And one wave will lead one to graduation from the wheel of karma, and the other will lead one to the wisdom that is gained through karma. So it's not that there's a conflict between right and wrong, or one is good and one is bad. It is simply a question of the soul's yearning, and one has to be true to that yearning. If one tries to force oneself out of some intellectual belief that one should be on some other wave, it won't work. It will just create unhappiness. One has to follow one's heart wherever it leads one, and that will ultimately bring one to the perfection of that unfoldment. But one must always remember that whatever happens, even if it seems to bring suffering or loneliness or a sense of being a stranger in a strange land, or of feeling lost and broken, all of that is part of an illusion that is only an appearance in the hologram that has to have such a strong energetic surge that it awakens one to the truth that one is the entire ocean containing all the waves, and letting go of the particularity and partiality of an individual journey, and to recognize the awesomeness of the journey of the mind of God itself, that is reaching the culmination of its self-realization. You know, human language deceives us in certain ways. It has given us the word individual that nowadays means or is defined as referring to the bodily character. But that bodily character is actually a dividual. It's an extremely internally divided structure. And it is divided from every other individual. The one individual, the one indivisible consciousness is God. And God is the innermost self of every individual. And only by claiming that absolute individuation that is one's birthright as the unborn, as the absolute self, can one be free of the self-divisions, the internal conflicts of a individualized ego that is caught between different desires and different dreams and different paradigms of reality. And it's important to know that whenever one is done with the individual level of the mind, that through simply returning to the silence and the center point of consciousness, one can attain the true individual nature of your being that will bring redemption and salvation from whatever suffering the individual is trapped in or seems to be trapped in. And so that freedom of instant liberation is there no matter what happens, no matter what quicksand of karma one might think one is sinking in. The perfection of the real self that is deathless and birthless is always accessible. And it's the realization of that inner safety that is that free pass I spoke of some time back in a class that will enable one to pass through the gate into God consciousness, to use the name of a retreat that's coming up, I think, in a couple of weeks. And that's really what it's about. There is an internal gate in our consciousness between the individual and the individual. And it's the passing through that gate that is also a passing from the pravritti to the nivritti. It's that passing through the gate which is present in every religion as a metaphor. Whether it's the gateless gate of Zen or the pearly gates of heaven, but that gate is the gate in which there is the death of the individual and the awesome realization of the eternal individual God self, and the transition that comes from passing through that gate is the most awesome and ultimate passage that awaits us. Because the glory of God consciousness, which is our home and our highest destiny, is present in an instant as we cross the threshold from the illusion of the mortal mind to the immortal self. And it's that passage that many in the world are now seeking, because the exhaustion of their own karma and the dead end of the world situation that they feel, and the alienation that is felt in a world that has become too cruel and too blind and too dark and too ruled by the collective death drive, will motivate many now to want to pass through that gate without waiting. And so the retreat is really to help understand how to make that passage in the most effortless and victorious way, without any residue of resistance or of nostalgia for a past or an impossible future, but to recognize the majesty of living in full presence that releases one from all of the uncompleted gestalts of the ego that feels loyalties to a disappearing world of options and of others, and allows and invites one into the ultimate feeling of arriving home to the place where one always wanted to get to in life, but mistook that for samsaric level achievements. And the recognition, once it dawns, that the only ultimate achievement that is meaningful and essential is that one of crossing through the gate into living God consciousness. The achievement of liberation while the body is alive and while the mind can absorb and appreciate its infinite nature and be filled with that infinite wisdom and frame of reference of the divine intention of this entire creation, and manifest that as the essential movement that spontaneously enables one's heart to communicate and transmit the joy of that realization and the light that comes with it and the sense of safety and of rescue that comes about when one has passed through that gate. And it's that self-rescue that is available to all that we want to describe and to guide those who are ready for that ultimate shift of consciousness to gain as easily and as as completely, without leaving any residue behind, so that there isn't a passing back into the individual. There isn't any remaining sense of having not completed what one came here to accomplish, that can only be accomplished here by being there and uniting in non-duality those two dimensions of our eternal self. So I hope that's a useful description of what we'll be doing in that retreat. And hopefully that will be of some help to those who at some point in the future may recognize the value of that understanding. So, the floor is open.
Bruce?
Following up on that last point, I was just curious your thoughts about as, let's say, this situation that you're describing with the people's karma,
mm-hmm.
no longer bearing fruits,
mm-hmm.
and the fruits becoming more rotten and withered,
mm-hmm.
and at a global level and mm-hmm. Collective level, options disappearing, things becoming more chaotic, less stable. Do you think there will be, I mean, like for example, there's sort of like a religious reawakening that's mm-hmm. happening around the world as well. I've seen it a lot in the U.S. with Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious if you think that there will be a collective desire to ride that Nivritti wave, or if it's, you know, people are going to just end in sort of a desolation state and feel lost and hopeless. I mean, there's a proliferation of mental illness that's breaking out and in many different forms.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, both will be occurring, but those who do have a sincere yearning to connect with God will feel to some degree, depending on how much obscuring, egoic, individuated conflicts there are that veil the light of God, but those whose yearning enables a breaking through of those veils, they will experience the rapture. And that's real. They will experience the bliss of the soul being brought into the light and no bardo states, but a very heavenly welcome by angels and a sense of really feeling the profound wonder and amazement and joy that God is real and their faith was not futile and not a fantasy, but is actually fulfilled in the end. And it's that fulfillment that creates the power of faith that will continue throughout the next cycle, you see. So there really is no end of a world. No world ever began, and it never ends. But the information that has led to a sense of futility and hopelessness and all of that is finally overcome by most souls who won't graduate. They will still return because they hadn't worked through all of the identifications with the ego, but they will know that passing through the gate into the light of the arms of God, and in a way going into a very peaceful sleep in that state of union that will be the source of the energy for their first life in the next cycle. That will be a life of great holiness because of that. And so it will help in the sustenance of the next world. And so this is part of the work of Vishnu, of that archetypal aspect of God consciousness that is being seeded into all the souls who have that kind of adoration of God, or of Buddha, or of the Tao, or of whatever religious signifier they have for that ultimate reality. It's irrelevant. But that will perhaps determine the karmic unfoldment of the nature of souls identified with a particular religion, who can only come back in the next cycle when that religion has appeared again. And then they may be apostles and disciples and martyrs and saints of that that religious, let's say, tribe of souls within the whole family of souls, and will work in many lives to sustain that faith in God and transmit it to others. So yes, as a long answer, but I do think that for many, this will become ever more a time in which the sense of the presence of God in the world will get stronger and stronger, while there will be others for whom it will be the opposite. Oh, go ahead.
I have a few more questions, unless anyone sure. else has. So we are beginning to read this play together, Emperor and Galilean. And I know the Muslim scholar spoke a little bit about these themes, but I wanted to hear your perspective.
You know, I'm going to do that in another satsang, maybe next week, but I will address that play and why we're doing it and what I think is to be gained by it. But I think this evening is premature for me to do that, okay?
No worries, I've got another one. Okay, so we saw in the news recently, although it was sort of swept under the rug quite quickly, a new whistleblower coming forth about government acquisition of alien spacecraft and these sorts of things, and it's not exactly a new story for
no.
us. And, you know, there's a lot of corroborating evidence that we've gone over in the past for this. But I'm curious your thoughts of if this is more a distraction / psyop, or if you think there's any legitimacy in or authenticity in this.
It's both. I mean, he's not really a whistleblower because he had no... He admits he has no direct evidence of any of it. It's just he heard second and third hand about these things, you know. So clearly he was told to do this. It's not really any kind of a breakthrough from someone with real knowledge. So I wouldn't put it in that category. And I think it's a mixture. We could say it's a limited hangout. That's part psyop and part preparation for a revelation of a certain kind of unfoldment in the samsaric plane that will shock many. And this is one of the ways to prepare, as predictive programming does. It's the same sort of laying the groundwork for the next information download that they'll give. Okay.
Thanks, Junya. I want to understand more about the pravritti and the nivritti wave and how it works internally, because I, as you were speaking about it, I can feel that I feel both of these energies going on inside me. Like there's this, the pravritti wave of still wanting to achieve these kinds of unfulfilled dreams and energies and drives and from life, and wanting to not deny them but recognize, you know, the love for life that those have given me, but also recognizing, like you say, that there is this sense that for whatever reason, those things haven't like fulfilled themselves or emerged at their highest degree, mm-hmm. and yet there's still like this wanting it to happen, mm-hmm. and wanting to give it the attention and energy, mm-hmm. that it would take to allow those to unfold fully, and mm-hmm. but then the recognition that, as you say, that that's kind of the individual perspective of what this one life is about, where there's a whole nother broader perspective of life as a whole that I don't feel like I relate to on a daily basis, because there's still this sense of being somebody who wants, mm-hmm. to, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand. The paradox is this. When you are on the Nivritti wave and you identify as the God Self, then all of those abilities that you can't fully make use of in the Pravritti wave will be used. But they will be used in the service of God, not in the service of the ego. And then there will be a very joyous laugh of the realization that everything you wanted is going to be achieved, but it's going to be achieved by your real self, not by the ego illusion. And that ego was necessary to create the technical skills to fulfill the ability to transmit through music, in this case, the beauty of God's presence. But only when you're in God's presence and you are able to manifest that beauty and that love and that joy can all of those technical skills be actually used and brought to their highest fulfillment. So you will see that there's really no conflict at all, and that the wave of God consciousness, you remember the other day I said, when you get to nirvana, you realize there's neither nirvana nor samsara. There's a unification. Everything is non-dual. Everything is one. And the total fulfillment of your being will manifest, but not with any veils of illusion or belief in any need to be somebody. That will have all faded away. But the glory of who you really are and who all of this is manifesting, its richness as a cosmos, will be singing through you and will be creating the sounds of the glory of that infinite presence. So it will all happen when you surrender to the mystery of who you really are. And it's in that surrender that the ego will think is a letting go of one's dreams that will actually be the fulfillment of them.
Thanks, Shunyip. I feel like you've said that to me many times, and probably everybody's tired of hearing you talk about that with me. But I think there's a technical issue for me that keeps me from being able to actually allow that to happen, that surrender that you're talking about, because I feel very much this love for life, for God, for the mystery, mm-hmm. and yet it feels like I don't know what it's like to make sacred music or to really allow that to come through. And so then there's this sort of somewhere in between feeling of not really being able to sing devotionally and like fully sacred music, nor is there an ability to just like kind of let it all hang out and go for it and make, you know, music that just rocks, you know. So there's
the
this
one
like
speaking is not your real self. And once you have crossed through the gate to the real self, that objection will disappear. And it will happen in according to God's will and in the time that God determines, God being your real self. But the ego can't force it. It can't create it. And suffering over the fact that it hasn't happened yet will not bring it about. Okay? So the more that there is acceptance of the will of God and the knowledge that you will be guided, and if you give yourself into the service of God, you will be used by that source. You will become an instrument of God, literally. And then the instrument you play will be a secondary instrument that will transmit that that power and that beauty into the world. But trust that it will happen not because you have thought your way out of the ego. That won't happen. It's when you've let go of the attempts to do that and you simply accept your being as you are right now, that you move into presence and out of that tendency to try to create a future that is, you know, fulfilling your imaginary vision of what you could be or should be. All of that needs to be let go of and put yourself totally in the hands of God, and then it will happen effortlessly.
Thanks.
You'll ask me again in the next satsang. That's fine. I try to give a slightly different answer each time so it's not boring.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't be reminded enough, so not to worry. Thank you for this teaching. I was very impacted by the lightning during the guided meditation, right when you were saying let go of otherness. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like the teaching was the same theme. But I appreciated your explanation of the retreat and passing through the gate. I feel like this feeling of wanting to arrive home is something I've always felt, I guess, in the pain of life. But I was sitting here contemplating the title, Passing Through the Gate, and was reminded of the Gate Gate Paragate Parasangate Bodhisvaha, which is spelled like gate.
And it's the same,
is it not the same
truth that's being expressed?
That was my question. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just an interesting coincidence.
Indeed it is. One of many synchronicities. So yeah, that's a good point. And that is the going, gone is gone through that gate. So every religion has that as the ultimate point of life. And this is the moment to achieve that, because the wave will carry us effortlessly through the gate if we allow it to. Okay, thanks, Parvati.
Could you speak a little bit on impermanence?
Impermanence?
Yeah, like it's like inconceivable for the limited mind to remember that like this body is not going to last forever.
Really?
Yeah. Like
when you get to my age, then it's very easy. You remember it every moment.
Yeah, that's the craving. It's like to stay in the remembrance of like the whole picture.
Sure. Well, but you see impermanence everywhere, right? Everything is changing, even in an accelerated way now. Things that you took for granted one day are gone the next. And so we are living in a time of heightened impermanence, far more than before. Life used to be far more permanent because there weren't as many people. There weren't the kinds of technologies. People stayed put, you know, in the same farm for their whole lives. Many people wouldn't even go from one village to the next, so they would be with the same people their whole lives. Life was very simple and seemingly permanent. Now people travel around the world, and from one minute to the next, they're in another country and, you know, in another situation. And in every social organization, there are all kinds of conflicts and splits and wars and sudden divorces between people and sudden shocking changes of every kind. So I would think impermanence is right there in everyone's face these days. In an ashram, we try to minimize those kinds of shocking impermanences, but they happen. And that's the nature of the world. It's becoming a kind of whirlwind, and all of those impermanent changes are all converging and culminating on the impermanence of the world itself that is now reaching its end point. But the good news is when you go through that wormhole or that vortex, on the other side is a new world. And so even though there is impermanence, there is also the eternal presence of the permanence of the self that never changes, even as it witnesses all of the changes happening all around it. And it's by connecting to that which never changes that we can tolerate and endure the impermanence around us and be able to navigate it without a sense of loss and without a sense of things going wrong and catastrophic things that shouldn't be happening. Because death is part of life. And as we approach the death of a world, we are also approaching its rebirth and a new life being given. So if you can't yet keep in mind the impermanence of it, I think that you'll find that soon events will clear away that obstacle. And you'll recognize that the impermanence indeed is all around you. And it may be that right now some part of the ego mind it wants to stay in denial of that impermanence because it can create great anxiety if you're in a state of impermanence that is out of your control. And it is out of the control of any individual. So I think that it is it's not something to worry about, and you will come to recognize that the impermanence is manifest in ever more shocking ways, and I think you will begin to experience it in the microcosm of changes that will be happening in your own consciousness and in the situations that you face and in the world situation as a whole. If you just, read the news, you will see how impermanent things are very quickly. So I don't think that's a problem. The real essential point to grasp is the underlying permanence of the absolute self that you are and that can accept the change, the growth, the aging of the body. Not that there will be much of that in this final period because it will be accelerating so fast, but you will discover, if you haven't yet already, that all of the karma that has not yet been settled, not only from this life, but from all the other lives, has to be settled in the time that remains. And so it gets settled one way or another. And the best way to settle it is through yoga, through surrender of the karmic intentions to God, and then that all gets turned into wisdom and into spiritual power. But if it has to act out as karma and create suffering, then again, it is a blessing if you learn from that and then take the path of surrender to the changeless presence of pure consciousness. So I'm not sure that I helped answer your question, but I think you won't soon have any trouble recognizing the impermanence. And look, if you you know, you work in the greenhouse, you see plants growing, and then suddenly there are bugs, or there is something else, and some of them are dying, right? And then new ones are growing. So life's impermanence is everywhere, and you know, it's something that is usually not wanted to be focused on by the ego, because it can create nervousness about one's lack of control of all of this. But I think if there is sufficient recognition and faith in the goodness of the changes that are bringing that impermanence to be, that one will enjoy the intelligence of God that is making all of it happen. Okay, I hope that's useful to you.
Yeah, that was helpful.
Thank you. I think Vajra has a question.
Thank you. I really appreciated the explanation of the two waves of pavritti and nivritti, and I had a question about that because it reminded me of this book I read a while back on Tantra, and they were saying that the renunciant path and then the householder path are just, it's just a choice and it leads in the same direction. And I wondered, though, from what you said about the pavritti and nivritti, if it is a choice, or if it's the soul's destiny, or if those two are somehow kind of intertwined as whatever is ordained, and if it really does, as the book said, lead to the same destination, because you said that one is liberation and one may be result in a recycle on the wheel of karma. Those are my questions.
It's both, because we have an illusion of free will and of making choices. We don't really. Everything is ordained. But the making of that choice in a way can trigger the fulfillment of it, in the same way that it can work from the top down, and the will of the Tao, if you will, can cause one to recognize the wisdom of shifting. It's not a matter of being a sannyasi versus being a householder. It's really a matter of renouncing the ego, whether you're in a house or you're wandering around on pilgrimage is irrelevant. It's not what your body is doing. It's where your mind is located and which side of the gate you're on. But the power of God has drawn the attention through from samsara into nirvana, then everything happens spontaneously to bring about the use of the instrument of body and mind to serve that highest purpose. So it's more of a at a soul level, the surrender to that will, rather than the effort to try to soothe and fulfill the ego's desires. And the more one is in the buddhi, in the intellect, recognizing one is not the ego, that disidentification is what brings about the transmutation of one's consciousness into the divinized state in which everything then is, happens in a state of grace.
So one could be a householder on the nivritti path that leads to liberation, but if one is not renouncing the ego, that's the pavritti path that will lead to.
That's right. You can be a sannyasi and have a big ego. It's sure. not. It's not about what your body is doing. No. Okay. It's only about.
So the two paths are not about choosing, as you just said, householder or renunciant. It's just about choosing God.
No.
Essentially.
It's all about consciousness, which level of consciousness you're choosing to be in.
And I also wanted to ask about passing through the gate, because you said everyone will eventually pass through the gate. Now, is passing through the gate an equivalent to liberation?
Well, some will pass through it after the death of the body. And some will pass through it while alive. Others will not pass through the gate, but they'll at least get to the gate, and they'll feel the light and the bliss coming from the heavenly realm, and they will leave the samsaric plane with that as the last impression, so that it creates that desire for holiness and for a heavenly world in the next cycle.
Does passing through the gate have something to do with where you are or where you return in a yuga?
Yeah, it has everything to do with that. Your destiny will be determined by whether you have passed through and used your life as an instrument of God's will rather than the ego's will or not. And so, yes, that will determine the pattern of one's lifetimes in the next cycle, and the level of purity of heart, generosity, compassion, goodness, all of those virtues that are part of all religious paths really are within the ego still, but they purify the ego to be able to perceive the presence of God and the light of God. And so they create the potency for lifetimes in earlier yugas when that power of God is much more present in the world and people are much more soul conscious and have more of the siddhis, more of the spiritual powers that have atrophied in Kali Yuga. Whereas if one stays in a Kali Yuga consciousness and doesn't develop that kind of holiness of being, that sacredness of one's mental activity, of every one of one's thoughts, so there aren't any angry thoughts and angry and envious or vicious thoughts of any kind. There isn't any of that aggressivity or paranoia. Then one is creating the conditions for manifesting in a world in which there isn't any aggression. There are no wars. There is no conflict, and one feels at home in such a world. Whereas if one doesn't do that purification, then those sanskaras, which will remain latent, will bring one into one's first lives in a Kali Yuga time, and one will miss out on all of the richness and beauty of the earlier yugas. So
this unpurified consciousness will never even see the gate or the light. You would just go to a bardo and then return in Kali Yuga.
It may get a vision of others who are seeing that, but it won't do it for itself.
Yeah. So in a way, it's just about the levels. Well, not just.
So every soul is individual and different. We will be either closer to the gate or actually pass through it or pass through it sooner and do a different kind of service afterward. Everyone's karma and destiny is different and unique. But there are some souls who, in the same way in a play, there are some characters who are on stage for the whole play. There are others who come on one scene and have one line and that's it. You know, then they're backstage the rest of the play. They have a very small part. So do you want a big part in the drama or do you want a small part? And what kind of a part do you want? What kind of a part are you able to play? And that will depend on your capacity to have the courage and the wisdom and the egolessness to be able to function in worlds in which that kind of a level of consciousness is necessary to thrive in such a world. And so, and to be a leader even, and a guide and a sustainer of a world of goodness. So that the amount of that kind of energy and determination to stand for God, for truth, for love, for joy, and to live, to make it real and authentic, not just give lip service and prayers, but to live that truth internally, in one's heart and one's mind constantly, will determine one's destiny.
And to be surrendered to whatever part God gives you to play.
Well, yes, but the point is that will bring about very naturally a heroic part, because that is the type of virtue and the qualities of being that enable one to sustain one's soul through a longer period under different world conditions than exist today.
Thank you very much.
To go back to this point of impermanence, over the last couple of weeks, I've in the Guru Vaichakra Kovai.
What's that?
In the Guru Vaichakra Kovai, I keep on coming across passages about this kind of perceiving the body as like filthy or decaying, or that kind of attitude towards the body. Is it coming from a recognition that there's impermanence and there has to be that kind of level of severity to kind of like get it into the mind? Or is that like a level of kind of ascetic hatred, because you could also
It's not about hatred. This is a tendency in all religions. You see it in Christianity too, but it's very present in the East with these kinds of meditations, especially in the Buddhist tradition, of seeing the body. Let's say it's mostly for men in chakra too, frankly, who see this woman, you know, as a skeleton or as dead or as defecating and as filled with pus and excrement and all that, make her as unattractive as possible so you can let go of your obsession with sexual conquest or whatever. It's meant in particular for the attachment to the sensual realm, to enable one to have the space in one's consciousness to encounter a higher level of being with greater meaningfulness and love and joy and all of that from a very contracted kind of a state. But once one is beyond all of that, then those sorts of meditations and exhortations are no longer necessary or useful. But it's not really to create any kind of hatred, but more a disgust for being like an animal, you know, sniffing people's private parts rather than, you know, focusing on the presence of God. And egos in those lower states are obsessed. And today you see many people, they are obsessed with pornography and with all kinds of things, that these kinds of meditations might actually be useful for them. So it's intended specifically for those in that sliver of the kundalini dimension that can't get out of that assemblage point in which that obsession takes over their minds.
Thank you. It's very helpful.
Thank you for tonight. I appreciated your definition of individuation, being free from divisions of the self or something like that. I think you said divisions of the self, or...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, self divisions. And I've been thinking a lot of, I mean, I've always been, I was captured by Maslow's hierarchy of needs years ago that was introduced here. And so I think a lot about the importance of individuation. But in the context of these two waves, can one be individuated in both paths, let's say? Or would you say that only someone on the Nivritti path is really going to be individuated?
Both paths are necessary. You see, no one can come into the world and be immediately enlightened without getting an ego. You get a lot of people saying, you know, I want to be a parent. How do I raise my child so they never have an ego and they're immediately... No, the children are enlightened. They have to lose it. They have to get an ego. They have to struggle. They have to learn both how to adapt to society and then how to go beyond it. You need both. You need to gain the skills to be able to function within the frame of the tribe or the community or the world situation. And then you need the courage to go on an individual journey in which you use everything that you have learned, but for a higher purpose of bringing a different level of truth into the world that the society and your own family were in denial of, and to bring that light into the darkness of the world, even though they may not want to hear it. So you have to use the powers first that will be part of the individuation that gets you to the strength of then going to the higher level of freedom from the dividuation of the ego into the return to God consciousness, and then from there using all of that as a way to serve as a kind of parent to the world, a kind of mother, a divine father. This is why they call spiritual leaders Baba and Mataji, right? It's that whole idea that the ego needs parenting, that it didn't get properly and is still stuck in an infantile state, and it needs those who have attained that kind of spiritual maturity to be able to help raise them and to use all of your powers and your artistic capacities to enrich people's lives and inspire them to grow and take the hero's journey as well. So it is a passing of the torch, but first you have to get the torch lit and then bring it into the darkness and then light others who will then go on their journey as well. Okay. Thank you. It's a good question. Well, no more questions. We're, I guess, officially out of time anyway. So that's good. I hope that this was useful to everyone on your own path of individuation. And for those who are leaving, again, blessings. And stay in touch. Let us know how your journey is going. And know that... that the ashram and the souls here will always keep you in our hearts with great affection and great love. And for those going on short, hopefully short journeys, to know that you are still held in our hearts very firmly and very much a part of the Sangha wherever your body may go in space and time, and that you are protected by that love and that energy that knows that this is your home within this phenomenal plane, and will bring you safely back. But always remain completely present to the situations that unfold, and very wisely use what is appearing to function in the service of God as a teacher to those who do not know and who are suffering. as a divine mother that I know that you will do in, on your journey. But for everyone, that's really what we're here to do, to grow out of the larval state of consciousness that the ego is, because it's always got an infantile core, and to mature into that level where we have let go of all childish things and we are here to serve and to parent all of those souls to reach the maturity of God consciousness. And this is how one generation serves the next and in turn is served by the Supreme Lord, who is maturing us all to graduate from this plane. So thank you all for all of your willingness to grow and to change and to be impermanent and also to go through the gate into the true permanence of your divine nature. Namaste.